percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
It's that time. Yes, time to consider all things fun and curious. And I've got a few headlines. Rumors. I love this. Rumors. Star Trek. Were you a fan? I'll just say one word. Picard. Yeah. Okay. Rumors. You know that they picked up the series and they're going to be doing a whole lot more work with this and possibly even an animated, like a cartoon. But the rumor has it from several different sources, of course. That's the way rumors work, especially on Twitter, that he is interested and they've been talking. Nothing signed yet, but possible coming back as Picard for Star Trek series. Now, the other fun thing that's happening, well, maybe I'm the only one who thinks it's fun. Mommy Bird up at the Canada Blues Fest is causing problems. Apparently, she's a threatened bird, one of those that is very, very rare and needs to be protected. Anyway, she's on a nest that killdeer, tawny colored bird protected by the Canadian government. She is right there where the main stage is supposed to go up. It's now called the Blues Nest Incident. All right. The Blues Nest Incident. And what happened is she had her own Twitter account for a brief time and then they suspended it. I'll have to go back and see if it's been resurrected again. But it's put everything to a halt. And they say the thing is that these birds are really smart, too, because what happens, the festival workers who've watched the killdeer, they have a little thing that they do for media and others who happen to be watching. But for the media, they pulled out all the stops and they ran around pretending to be injured during the news conference. Birds aren't dumb, okay? So the killdeer has that distinctive broken wing act that they were quite impressed with. And so that's what they do because it means you're too close to the nest, okay? So, of course, all the media people with the cameras and things were not really welcome there. And they were trying to make a point. At this point, everything is up in the air. They're in a holding pattern as they wait for a federal response to come collect the bird. I don't think they'll do that. I think the bird will probably be all done and we'll find out. The book that I really, really want you to check out, because this has to do with, if you believe in Bigfoot or Sasquatch, it doesn't matter. If you don't know a thing about Bigfoot or Sasquatch, by the time you get done with this book, you're going to know everything. And I had no idea. There was a guy who actually was taken in by a family of Sasquatch, I think in the 20s. We're going to have, and I Avril? Is it Avril or Avril? I know I ask.
Avril.
Okay, good.
Avril.
Uh-huh. Avril Seal. And you
Avril,
even have...
Avril Lavigne has made my life hell.
Oh, that's awful. I'm sorry.
It's a long A, Avril.
Uh-huh. It's a long... Okay, yeah, but you have roots. You have history. You even have... your great-grandfather has a big statue, right?
That's right, yeah.
That was impressive.
Great. but who's counting?
Great. Huge. Okay, so with this book, and typically you do a little bit more of a conservative approach. You just do the regular news and that kind of thing. And this is a step into, and I know you don't like to call it paranormal. You're going to call it science, at least from what I read.
Maverick science.
Okay, maverick science. There you go. That little.
That's one politically correct term for it.
Okay, well, this took you off the beaten trail, off the beaten path, into the cool and really interesting, which I've just discovered recently, having been to one of these areas with all these signs, Sasquatch realm. And I think your story is fabulous because for anybody who isn't familiar with it, you include a lot of the backstory and the history of how this got started. And that is... I had no idea. What, 10,000 with you? 10,001 sightings of Sasquatch?
That's right. Yeah, that's my best guess. There isn't any central repository where all of them, where you can find all of them. And this, by its nature, there's a lot of hearsay involved. But my conservative estimate is that there are 10,000 reports. And of course, there are many more, many fold times that as far. sightings, but as far as people have taken the time and taken the risk of filing a report, there are about 10,000 of them, as best as I can tell.
The new book, it's called Monster Hike, a 100-mile inquiry into the Sasquatch mystery, and available, anomalous books. I saw this, I thought, oh, this is fantastic. I want to find out more. And so somebody on my Facebook went, mystery? Well, yeah, it's a mystery. It's an unknown. It's an anomaly. And with this many sightings, there's more to the story. And I like the fact that you include a lot of those backstories.
Well, thank you.
Who was, in your mind, I mean, we all know the video, the Patterson-Gimlin film. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal. But in terms of the research, there was an anthropologist who came out pretty much against the grain. And, you know, when you're way, way off into that field, people immediately ridicule you. That I think got the whole thing started by trying to classify them as a specific family of ape-like humans.
Right. Grover Krantz was the name of the one that really kind of tipped the scales for me. And he was an anthropologist. He's gone now, but he was at Washington State University, and he began studying them in the late '60s. As did John Bindernagel, who is in British Columbia. He's sort of the Canadian counterpart to Krantz.
Yeah.
And he's a wildlife. Bindernagel's a wildlife biologist. Krantz is an anthropologist, and now sort of the heir to those is Jeffrey Meldrum, who is in Idaho and is a frequent expert witness on bipedal locomotion, and you'll see his name and his face a lot of times on these specials on the Bigfoot mystery.
Well, and that I think you recommended the Grover Krantz book, Big Footprints.
That's
resource.
Right. Uh-huh.
So
that's a great one.
Okay, so when you were a kid and imagining all things Planet of the Apes,
right?
Did you wear that costume a lot?
Oh yeah.
You said
it wasn't just
a holiday thing.
It wasn't just Halloween. No, it was kind of an obsession. But yeah, I just got to thinking about that kind of recently, and it was funny to me to reflect on that kind of phase in my life and think, oh, that's really not that far off. I've always kind of had this fascination with hairy two-legged things that are sort of act like people but look more like apes, So I guess it goes way back, before. I was even, thinking a lot about Bigfoot itself.
Aware of it. Well, and I think that's what's so funny, because there's that connection. And at the same time, your interest, you kind of kept a clandestine approach to this. This was, you would kind of feel out the water before you mentioned any kind of interest. And then if, somebody answered the wrong way, not going to talk about that.
Yeah, right. A quick change of subject. And it's a taboo subject. And when you're not out, I kind of like to use the term out. And it's not exactly like, sexuality, but it is kind of, it's something that is taboo, and that if certain people, found out that you believe a certain thing, then you kind of, are disinvited in their minds, to a lot of things. So it's dicey, but I just kind of made the determination, I guess, about a year ago that I didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
That this was something I was interested in, and I wanted to be counted. When the news finally came out, I wanted to be counted among the people who took the risk to say, yeah, there's something here. There's something real here.
And the cool thing,
it's not just mythology.
That's what I like about your book. Because it draws a lot of other factors into the equation. The enormous amount of research, the enormous numbers of sightings, and not just here, but worldwide. There are different names for Bigfoot, Sasquatch across the world. But that's what I think is very compelling for people to kind of get caught up with, how this got started and the reality. I want to come back. We're going to take a quick break. Again, the book is called Monster Hike, a 100-mile inquiry into the Sasquatch mystery. My guest, Avril Seal, and I want to come back and talk about the guy who got kidnapped. Just a little brief over to you, because that was, I'm like, what? What?
Great.
Okay. We're going to come back in just a few with my guest on Wendy's Coffee House.
Gonna be some sweet sounds coming down the night shift.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Monster Hike, a 100-mile inquiry into the Sasquatch mystery. 100 miles, one step at a time. And April counted every step. Wow, that's really dedicated.
Well, my phone counted every step.
Oh, okay. You had assistance.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now I haven't done a lot of research. I don't know all the background, the backstory on this. But when I discovered through reading your book some of the other little quirky stories that are, you know, in the timeline, the one that stood out was the guy who was allegedly kidnapped by a family of Sasquatch and then came back to tell the story and said, hey, these guys are real. What did you think about that?
Well, it's very crazy. It dates way back to the 1920s, and there was a fellow by the name of Albert Ostman, O-S-T-M-A-N, and he had some vacation time. I forget now what his day job was, but he had some vacation time, and he wanted to go up into British Columbia and pan for gold, just prospect. And so he took a rifle and a bedroll and some food. I don't know what he took, but he went off by himself into the mountains of British Columbia. And one night, when he was sleeping, he claims that he was picked up in his sleeping bag by something. Didn't know what it was, but he was down in his sleeping bag, and suddenly the sleeping bag was off the ground and being carried through the air. And again, you know, I'm a little rusty on some of the details of the story, but
yeah.
I think he claimed to have been carried for about 3 hours, and he could tell that he was going uphill sometimes and going downhill sometimes, and I believe he had I don't know if he had his gun with him at the time in the bag or if he was just, if he didn't, but in any event, he about 3 hours later, I don't know if it was daylight yet or not, but he was set back down on the ground and emerged from his sleeping bag, and he was in this basin, and he was surrounded by four Sasquatches. It appeared to be a family. It appeared to be an adult male, an adult female, and then a juvenile, two juveniles, mm-hmm. I think one male and one female, too, which is, as it turns out, is very typical. And he described some of the peculiarities of their bodies in ways that have been confirmed subsequently. Nothing sounds crazier than this story.
Yes, yeah, that's why I thought we'd start here.
nothing sounds crazier than this, but it turns out that the more research is done and the more videos and photos that emerge, the more the details of the story sort of check out. One of the things that he described was this gray pad on the bottoms of their feet. It's kind of like a dog's pads,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Kind of dark gray, thick, tough. And those are now called Ostman's pads after him because he described them way back in the 20s. And so it's a fascinating story. And he was held, he was sort of held captive in this basin for about 3 days. And observed them, and then he made an escape. He, the story goes that he offered the big male, the one who kidnapped him, his can of snuff.
Oh,
and
surprise!
They were just interested in the little things that he had on him, you know.
Yeah,
and so he gave him this can of snuff, and the male just downed it, just ate the entire thing.
Oh.
And kind of got sick, and I don't know if he passed out, but he incapacitated him, you know, momentarily.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard that whole story.
Albert took off, made his escape back, and, you know, it's been about a day getting back into civilization, finally found a mining town on the banks of this river, and, you know, eventually made his way back to civilization, but wild story,
yes.
Fascinating story in that, the more the details are kind of looked at, the more plausible it gets. at this remove.
Well, thank goodness he told
Green,
it.
Well, that's right, and he told it to a man named John Green, who just died about 2 years ago, and who was sort of the foremost researcher of his day. He was a newspaper man in British Columbia, and I've actually dedicated the book to him. And he was 80-some-odd years old when he passed away, and spent about 56 years of his life pursuing this mystery, just old-school, you know, shoe leather kind of thing, collecting newspaper clips and articles and drawing maps and trying to put two and two together in the pre-internet days.
Yes, yes.
So,
that's tedious.
Thank goodness Mr. Ostman told his story, and he seemed very sincere about it. And as wild as it is, it seems plausible
well,
on lots of levels.
And that's the part about this. There are stories in here that you also weave into the book, and I think you take a lot from. Is it Bob Garrett?
Bob Garrett. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and for people who aren't familiar with Bob, he's a Bigfoot researcher, dedicated. And people say that this is something that basically obsession. But he can't release some of his stuff, according to him, because the government has taken some of his files and is keeping an eye on him. And when you tried to approach him, say, hey, can you give me any tips? You didn't get a response because you figure he's probably laying super low.
Right. Well, that was kind of my assumption. And I haven't reached out to him since then, but you know, I certainly would like to talk to him at some point. He's a researcher in East Texas, which is where I was, which is where this hike takes place.
Yes,
and that's surprising to a lot of people because they believe, you know, if you think that there's a chance that Bigfoot exists at all, you typically think of them in the Pacific Northwest, and but the sighting reports, you know, make clear that there are just as many of them. East of the Great Plains as there are west of the Great Plains.
You put the map in the book.
Kind of
that map is impressive, with Texas and Arkansas and Louisiana and Oklahoma, that whole area.
Just covered, yeah.
Like, whoa, I had no idea. Like, oh, that's a little bit intimidating if you're going to go out camping, especially after you talk about. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Sorry to harsher mellow about camping, but
yeah. Oh, it wasn't me out there doing this; it was you. And I'm thinking,
the truth still sets you free, right?
Or frighten you to death.
Or frighten you. All information is good, you know. I do sometimes regret, kind of learning like so deeply about this, because there is a sense that the innocence I had about the outdoors is kind of gone now. And every time I go out there, especially out there in that forest, it's this double-edged sword. You know, it's fascinating. It keeps drawing me back there, kind of like a moth to the flame.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, I haven't taken my kids out there in a couple of years because, you know, I do believe what I write in the book.
And, yes.
And until they're, you know, trapping young men that can take care of themselves, I think twice about that kind of thing now. So I've kind of eaten from the what is the phrase in Genesis, eaten from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and it's no longer this Garden of Eden. You know, it's a place with snakes
with a caution sign and triangles.
Continue the metaphor.
And Sam, okay, hang on. So what we're going to do, because this is what I want to get into. This is the Sam Houston National Forest in East Texas, where you decided to go on your hike. I like the way you approach your hike, by the way. It's kind of not the all back to nature thing. It's a little bit of break for some Mexican food every now and then, and a shower, which is, hey.
Which is not the way it started out. I didn't intend that to be the case. But
okay,
that's what happened, so
that gives the rest of us hope. For those of us who are not going to do the Appalachian Trail or the Camino, we have hope that we can make tracks and it will count for something. I said, come on, we're going to come back. This is, again, a fascinating story. Monster Hike, Avril Seal. It's a a very, very compelling look into the Sasquatch mystery because he includes the backstory and he also has encounters and tells you what to look for that might make you a little bit more cautious and alert the next time you go out into the great wide open forest. Up next on Wendy's Coffee House. Stick around. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, talking Sasquatch, Bigfoot, or the others. That's what April Seal calls them, the others. And I think that's nice. I think that's more respectful because we really don't know as much about them to just put these labels on them. And, you know, I don't want to be called Bigfoot. That's just kind of rude.
Well, the name does fit, as you can see by if you go to see the cover of the book.
Absolutely.
It's apropos. But, there's so much we don't know about them that I just kind of opt for something more vague.
Okay, so this is audio, so I'm going to extract on the front of the book. It's your 10.5 size shoe next to a big monster print that is 18 inches. Is that what that is?
That's right, uh-huh. 18 inches long, 9 inches wide.
That's a score. Like, slam dunk, hallelujah, hail, whoa! Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was interesting because you tend to think that you would come across, you know, kind of romantically, you think you'd come across this miles and miles from anywhere, but this happened to be about 100 yards from an intersection, from a highway intersection. So
okay.
I have found that if you're within their range, there's really no rhyme or reason to where you might encounter them or evidence of them like this. And as I said, this is, you know, within 100 yards of the parking lot of one of the trailheads. And there it is. You know, you can make of it what you want, but I felt like it was pretty compelling. And it was subtle enough that my brother, who was out there with me at the time, passed it not once but twice. Mm-hmm. And he failed to see it. I saw it, and it conforms. The thing that's compelling about it is that it shows toes.
Yeah.
It's not just a blob. You know, it shows the definite shape of a foot, and it shows toes, and it conforms to the things that we suspect are true about Sasquatches, which is the ratio of the width to the length, which is 2-1. Like in our case, for modern humans, most people have a 3-1 length to width ratio of their foot. These things have a wider foot proportionately, so it's 2-1, and that makes sense. You know, when you think physiologically, you think about something that's trying to support that kind of weight, and it's also a flat foot. You can see from the print that it doesn't have a ball and arch like most of our feet have, and they're universally reported to have flat feet as well and not have a ball and arch. And again, that makes physiological sense when you're talking about 800 or 900 pounds of weight bearing down on a bipedal creature. So.
You rolled tape when you were out overnight too. So let's get into this is the first and second night, and you know, congratulations for sticking with it.
Kind of. I stuck with the hike. I had intended to, for those, you know, haven't seen the book, I had intended to through hike the entire thing in camp every night. And I had set up this elaborate system of food caching.
That was brilliant.
Caches of food along the way. And it was all, you know, working to plan until the very first night. And I got pretty frightened by a series of things I was seeing and hearing, and was debating coming off the trail altogether, just kind of punting the whole thing.
Yeah.
Till maybe till spring or till I could get somebody to go with me, because I was solo through this, and I was basically unarmed.
So
night one, sun goes down. And it's early. The sun was going down early because it's end of October. So by 7 o'clock, it's pitch black out there. I'm 6 miles from my truck. I'm 6 miles into the 100 miles. And this is, you know, my first stopping place. And it was a deserted hunter camp, is what they call them, and it's just within the National Forest. It's a primitive camp. There's nothing there but a place to put your tent, or in my case, to hang your hammock, and maybe a fire ring. You know, there's something like that, but there aren't any tent pads. There's nothing else out there. And so I got into camp, and I was alone, got my gear, my hammock strung up, and then the sun went down, and I started hearing things that comported with the Bob Garrett narrative about, and you know, basically the things I heard were deer that sounded like they were being killed silently, not by gunshots, but just distress calls, kind of frantic distress calls that would last about 5 to 10 seconds and then stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this was within about 400 yards of me, off in the thicket. So, had I not known anything about Sasquatches in this area, I would have just written it off like, well, maybe it's just a mating call, or maybe it's just coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, you know, these things, the Garrett claim is that these things sit at the end of game trails, and then they work in teams to hunt. And so one might be sitting at the end, inside of a yaupon thicket, at the end of a trail, and then the deer are flushed by others by means of vocalizations or knocking or just by their presence or by their smell or whatever it is. But they flush the deer towards the one who's in waiting, and then they just will ambush one by just reaching out and snapping its leg, and then at that point just twisting its head off. It's an easy play at that point once the deer is down from a broken leg. And then it's just kind of speculation as to how they go about, you know, disemboweling them and so forth. So it was a real, you know, I can't say I saw any of this happening, but it was a real possibility in my mind. And then, you know, within minutes after that, I hear this helicopter that is at treetop level, about an eighth or a quarter of a mile off from me. I could see it through the trees. And it's going slowly, and it's as if it's in a search, you know, for something. It's not going from point A to point B, and it's not going from Conroe to Huntsville as fast as it can. It's clearly hanging out, you know, over the forest at treetop level, and it's night, you know, just to underline that fact. And then it leaves. It kind of hovers around, and then it leaves. And then I hear gunshots. And then off to my east, I think there are about eight of them. And then about 10, 15 minutes later, here comes the helicopter again, and then it takes off again. And so I've got this whole
scenario
playing out in my mind. Like, well, what was that, and why? You know, and you know, there are alternative explanations for all of these things. I'm not naive.
We're not going there right now.
There are helicopters in the forest, you know, for other reasons. There are gunshots in the forest for other reasons.
Oh.
But when you put it all together, and you put kind of the zero dark 30 nature of this just happening, you know, immediately after dark, you know, Garrett claims that the Forest Service or some agency out there has ground sensors.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get tripped by things of sufficient weight, like pressure plates, kind of a thing.
Okay.
And he claims that when those pressure plates are tripped, that they'll dispatch these kill teams. And so, in my mind, there was all of these things were the Garrett conspiracy theory was firing on all cylinders.
Okay, wait.
At this point,
we're going to take a break because the next thing that comes along on your path kind of indicates something was happening, and this would be really intimidating. The two guys who show up.
Yeah.
And okay, so hang on. Again, we're talking about Monster Hike, the 100-mile inquiry into the Sasquatch mystery. And this is the Sam Houston National Forest in East Texas, a solo hike with a whole lot of extracurricular activities. next on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House Monster Hike, a 100-mile inquiry into the Sasquatch mystery. Come on, if you have not read anything like this, you're ready for it. If you don't believe, it doesn't matter, because you're going to learn. You're going to find out. And then you may be a little bit more observant the next time you go on a hiking trip. And definitely if you go on a through hike anywhere, you're going to be paying more attention, because Avril gives you all sorts of tips and clues. And this is what happens when two guys show up and you've kind of maybe brushed off what happened overnight, saying, oh, yeah, there's excuses, there's reasons, there's all sorts of explanations why none of that I was imagining could possibly be true, except for the two guys. And they make you question.
Right. Well, the sun comes up in the morning and I pack my stuff up and get back on the trail. And, kind of the birds are singing, the sun is shining, everything is good again, you know.
Yeah.
And I, as you say, I was kind of explaining away things in my head because part of me doesn't want any of this to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, one by one, it might have been the deer thing, might have been just a especially violent mating call kind of thing. And the helicopter could have been a search, for a hunter or something like that. And the gunshots might have been poachers who were out there after dark.
An escaped felon.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
That kind of thing. Oh, boy, I feel better, yeah.
Yeah, the state's most notorious federal prison is in the middle of the forest, too. I didn't really mention that. Didn't go into that.
Oh, good.
In any event, I was feeling great. It was a beautiful morning, and I was back on my way. And it was in about mile 8, I guess. And I see these two guys coming toward me. And, as you do, I hadn't seen anybody really since I left the truck in the middle of the afternoon the previous day. So when you see people out there, it's kind of exciting. It's not like, wow, there are people
Yay,
out there. You tend to kind of stop and exchange pleasantries. And so there are these two guys that were kind of big guys and stocky, kind of looked like they knew what they were doing, had real nice gear, real nice hiking, camping gear.
Gear is always impressive.
So I just said, well, how are y'all doing this morning? And they say, great. And this one guy just launches into this line of questioning, says, hey, have you seen anybody that looks like he's seriously injured out here? And I said, well, no, I haven't seen anybody at all. I saw this one guy, kind of this old hippie, back about 2 miles ago at a parking lot. He was throwing a frisbee to his dog. But other than that, I haven't seen anybody on the trail at all. I said, yeah, well, back there where this loop trail meets the main trail, we saw this pool of blood. And then he holds his arms out in a kind of an oval, in a big oval to where his arms don't quite touch.
Basketball.
Like a big pool of blood.
Okay.
And he said, we saw this pool of blood, and then we saw this blood trail going away from it that we followed for more than a mile.
And
I said, that's interesting. I didn't show all my cards,
Yes.
I didn't try to reconstruct the entire previous night to them. And then they said, the trail looked like the person was dragging his foot behind him, kind of like Quasimodo thing. And so, all this stuff is going through my head, like, this could be, I might be talking to the kill team who was out here last night, who's trying to like find the body and clean up, kind of a cleanup operation. And so I didn't really tip my cards at that point. I just said, well, I don't know. I guess it might have been a deer.
Yeah, it would have come with that.
Mm-hmm. Might have been something bigger. And I kind of just left it at that because, again, I didn't want to say, well, it might have been a Bigfoot. I didn't want to lead with
They'd
that.
They'd make you leave.
I didn't know anything about these guys. And I didn't want to, raise any red flags about me.
Yeah, yes.
And what I might have seen. And so I just I had places to be. I had a rendezvous with my brother later that day, so I just kind of kept on trucking. But it was a very interesting exchange.
Okay, so, we have got 4 minutes left, but the thing with this is that This is the beginning of your trip. There's even better stuff that happens as you go meandering along on your way. And so, you know, this is like the tip of the iceberg. And then you've got the sounds that you were recording overnight. Now, have you put those out anywhere? I noticed you said you were going to put them on a blog. Have you added that yet?
I have not uploaded those yet, but I still have them, yeah.
I think those are worth sharing,
too. One of the challenges is that there's about more than 20 hours worth of worth of audio, and most of it is completely just insects, you know, very unremarkable. So I haven't gotten around to editing editing those into something interesting yet, but I should do that. You've reminded me about it, and so that'll be a project of mine, is to edit that stuff into some.
Part of it is the knocks that you hear, those kind of things.
Right.
And see, this is for a novice who's just, you know, on the periphery of this. Those kinds of things are really essential because they get lost in the background. Like you said, it was the duration of being on the trail that made you more alert and to know what to look for and to identify things that earlier in the, you know, on the process, you may not have picked up either.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, this knocking phenomenon is something that's well known in Bigfoot research circles, and they think it's a communication of some kind. Clearly, it's like a Morse code, maybe Morse code for Bigfoots. They also will vocalize to each other too. They'll scream and howl, but in the researchers that I've spoken to in East Texas say that kind of the flat nature of the forest makes knocking particularly effective because it travels a really long way. And in the first knocks that I got were on a previous trip into the same forest, and it was a very eye-opening, ear-opening experience because I knew what I was hearing right away.
Yeah,
because there wasn't anybody else around us, and the forest was perfectly still, and so it was just quite alarming. And it was two of them. It was clearly a call and response that we got. One of them was a close clack, about maybe 50 feet away, and the other one was a distant double clack or double knock, and from about a quarter of a mile away. So it was clearly one communicating to the other, and I think they were communicating about my friend and me being there, kind of blocking them from a pond that they would normally go to for water before sunup.
Well, part of this, though, is that you're right there on the front lines of the story, and people get a glimpse of what it might be like to go out and do this on your own. And once you've had that experience, you just can't let go. I can see, you know, from the Planet of the Apes costume that you kind of got yourself used to as a kid.
Right.
To wandering into this territory. And I love all of the things you put at the end of the book. We're down to a minute left. And Avril, I really, really do think you have a lot more stuff to work with here. If you've got another book or you've got another way to go with it, the audio is great. And thank you. Thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, it was really my honor to talk to you and appreciate your interest. And it was a pleasure writing the book. And it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Drag your brother out there next time.
Yeah, I will. I will try.
He was barely involved. He had the couch and the dinners and, you know, the transportation. And that's what brothers are for.
He played a huge part in me being able to finish the hike, but he was not so interested in going out there with me.
No mosquitoes, no bugs, no weird sounds.
Yeah. No 10-foot tall hairy monsters trying to rip your head off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much. All right. Monster Hike, a 100-mile inquiry into the Sasquatch mystery. Definitely worth the read. And when you go camping next time, you want to leave the lights on. You might want to actually take a little extra ammo and a GPS, you know, that whatever they have that says call for help, that instant beam me up, Scotty. Till next time, stay curious. Wendy's Coffee House. Thank you, Avril. See ya.
Thank you.